Welcome to Stemming in Stilettos with Dr. Tasha, a podcast for and about women of color in STEM. These women are brave, beautiful, and brilliant. Their stories deserve and need to be heard. Their voice strong, their message clear, their experiences priceless. Now let's welcome this wonderful winning woman of color to the show.
Hi, and welcome to Stemming in Stilettos with Dr. Tasha. And let me tell y'all, I couldn't be more excited about today's guest. But you guys know I say that about every guest, but for real, I really mean it. I'm gonna ask my guest to say her name because I don't want to mess it up. Because I know from experience, having an unusual name. Leads people to assume that they know how to say it and they don't. So I don't want to mess it up. So tell us your name, how to say it, how to say your name.
Yeah, my name is simple. It's spelt phonetically, Salima Kibidi.
I had it right in my mind. Okay, so you guys, it's Salima Kimchi. I know part of her story because I've read her bio and I've low-key stalked her online, which she didn't find out until just now. So I don't know if she's going to wonder how long this interview is going to last, but let's do it, right?
I'm so glad. Honestly, Dr. Tasha, it's such an honor to be included amongst, some of the great discussions you've had with others on your podcast. And thank you so much for inviting me. This is something that's so dear to my heart, STEM, promoting women in STEM, women of color in STEM. So I'm really excited to kind of share my story with you as well and see where we can go with it.
Man, listen, this is one of the things that I promised myself I would do if I was ever, sort of like if I ever grew up enough and moved into myself enough to actually take the leap to do it. Right. Cause I'm a natural introvert. And so like talking to people, it takes so much energy for me. But this is a labor of love. I have not had a conversation with, one of my guests or all of the women, you included, that I didn't walk away saying I'm much better for having had that conversation. So I know today will be no different.
And honestly, I find that that's exactly it. I think it's like when you get to understand people's process and their whole history of where they came to be, then you recognize that there are certain, synergies there in terms of all of our stories and how we've come to be where we're at. But there's so many lessons through that kind of understanding of someone's process and someone's journey and that journey is not over, right? That it's just, just all these chapters that have been collected before. So I'm super excited to discuss with you. Hopefully some of my story will, be of inspiration to others, it'll resonate with other women as well.
Oh, I know it will. I know it will. And as we begin every single episode, Salima, please tell us your STEM story.
Yeah, well, I would say that my STEM story started when I was 7 years old. My parents actually came over to Canada in the 70s from Kenya, from East Africa, and they were born and raised in East Africa. And when they came over, I was born and raised in London, a city called London, Ontario, just outside of Toronto. Mm-hmm. And as I was going through the public, I was living in a city that was, white Anglo-Saxon, and there was very few people of color, even at my school, at my public school. But one of the things was, my parents who had come over from East Africa, especially my father, You know, he had come over as a civil engineer and worked with the Ministry of Environment for all of his career. And then my mother, who subsequently went to school after having me and my sister, who also went into the sciences and became a foot doctor, and she runs her own clinic and she runs her own orthotic lab. But basically, the story at seven started really with my dad taking a real interest in my education above and beyond the public school, because he had been taught mathematics and physics and chemistry under the Cambridge system in Kenya. And so he sort of felt like, you know, what I was learning at my age was not enough. And so essentially, I started studying mathematics at a higher level at home. And then my dad advocating with the school to say, no, my daughter should be doing higher level mathematics. And so the standard was set for me that not only was it possible for me to excel at mathematics, but that the standard in Canada wasn't up to par with how my father had, you know, the system he had kind of gone through. So when I was in primary school, I was actually going to high school for mathematics. And when I was in high school, I had already, studied university level mathematics at home with my father while still going to school. And so even before I went to university, I had done university level mathematics. In calculus and finite and algebra. And so I think one of the greatest things that I kind of, you know, learned at a young age is one, that I, you know, my standard was different than everyone else's standard, mm-hmm. and that I was held to a higher standard. So I held myself to a higher standard, and that girls are good at math. I think I grew up in a generation where, you know, it was always the presumption that boys are good at math and sciences, mm-hmm. and girls are good at humanities. And so for me, the fact that I was an equal to a boy was set for me from the beginning. Wow. And that the fact that I could be number one at math and always win the math awards was set for me from the beginning. And it was something achievable. So I think that I would really equate that my STEM story started with my father instilling in me that I had the capability, but that should be my standard.
Wow.
And for me, that I think that is something that is the greatest thing.
That is a gift. That is the gift that just keeps on giving. I know of at least two or three people right now that are doing studies on math identity as it relates to gender, because mm-hmm. of that very thing that you talked about, whereas there's this pervasive assumption that girls aren't good in math, girls are good in humanities, boys excel at math. And we know because you exist, and I loved math, so I'm going to put myself in that category and still, love math to a degree that, you know, I've taught it for so many years, is that like this idea that we would be good at math is like still foreign, you know, like that right there. It just blows me away. We're in 2022 and it's still here.
Yeah. And I would have to agree with you that we're in 2022 and there's still a presumption that especially in certain industries, that it's more male oriented still. Mm-hmm. And so one of the greatest things I think one of the things I learned from a young age is that I never saw, because I had a father who, you know, had taught so many people mathematics at university level, at a high school level, and he was one of the top students, even when he was in high school and university. And the fact that, you know, he says, you have talent, and it was genderless for him, the concept of being able to grasp mathematics, that was so essential in everything that I did moving forward, because I never had a complex that I wasn't capable or that it wasn't possible to be, you know, number one because of my, you know, because of my color or because of my gender. And that for me was essential.
Wow.
In terms of my identity of what was possible for me. And, you know, I think one of the biggest learnings, especially for people coming from outside of the country, right? My parents coming from Kenya, is that they always instilled in both me and my sister this concept that education is your weapon. Education is the tool that will equalize and provide you opportunities above and beyond, right? And so everything that I've done since then is also to promote that in Africa as well, amongst, you know, amongst the younger generation and especially African women, to really kind of African women, Canadian women, but younger girls to actually believe that, no, this has got nothing to do with gender, and this has got nothing to do with race or color or anything. That your capability is as much as your capacity is there. The question is, do you have the champions there that will actually show you or be the example that this is possible for you too?
Ooh, you know? Love that. I feel like the caption should read, the capacity is there, but do you have the champion? You know?
Like, yeah, and I think we all need champions, we all need mentors, mm-hmm. but we all need examples, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, I didn't necessarily have a female example at the time. I had a lot of strong, educated women around me, but when it came to mathematics, it was really the concept that it was genderless. It was presented as genderless for me. So me getting the top awards in all subjects, but you know, became possible because there was no concept of gender, and because my standard that I was held to by my father was higher than what was expected at school. And so that actually, you know, I think sometimes when you set the standard high, then it kind of, especially at a young age, then it's possible, right? Because your capacity is high to learn at that time. And so if someone has set high standards for you and said, yeah, this is your standard, this is the level at which you should be measuring yourself, not your classmates, not the average and beating the average, but you have to set the standard for what you want to do in life.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I just think you, yes. And I know you do, but like, I want to thank your dad. I do. No,
I think both my parents, because I think, you know, even my mother, I mean, when she came to Canada, you know, she didn't have a formal education. She hadn't even finished high school, but because I had a father who really believed in education, he also supported my mother. So she after having me and my sister, she actually started, she said, look, I want to do something with my life. My dad said, go ahead. And she actually started with grade 9 correspondence.
Wow.
Mathematics. And then my dad helped her and she went to university, and she did this all while having two kids. And then she became a foot doctor. And so for me, that's the inspiration, is that if someone who didn't even have a formal education can do it with the right support, then anyone can. So I really, really do equate a lot of the opportunities for me as being set by my, you know, by my parents and by, their, you know.
So when you went to, when you got to college, let's go to high school. Like, you're in high school, you're taking these, you know, you've probably blown your teacher's minds, and you're taking, you know, college level courses, and you're doing the like. What was choosing a college like for you?
Yeah. So I think because I had graduated, you know, a year earlier than my class. You know, I'd always kind of been ahead of the, you know, curve in terms of school. I think even the opportunities in terms of where I saw my life going, especially if you're in the sciences, is it was very typical, you know, coming from a Indian background from East Africa, you're either going to become a doctor or surgeon, or you're going to go into the sciences, become maybe an actuary or, you know, accounting or something like that. Right. And I think for me, that was kind of what I was thinking, is that I would, you know, go to university, study the sciences and follow one of those paths. But I think one of the other biggest, you know, biggest things for me was, there was one, I think there are certain themes or questions in our lives that are, you know, the existential questions or the questions that are all pervasive of trying to understand the world that we live in, right? And mine was trying to understand the concept of equality or inequality. Mm-hmm. Because I grew up in Canada, but I spent so much time with the family in Kenya that was remaining in Kenya and still remains there, I got to see the inequalities, very, very stark inequalities of even the privilege that we lived in not just in Canada, but back in Kenya, and seeing the inequalities. And so when I went to university, I, you know, even though I studied all of the sciences and even though I studied mathematics and so on and so forth, the exciting subjects for me were law, justice, and international development, because my parents had been involved in a lot of international development projects as well, and I had been involved in them since I was 6 or 7 as well, a lot of that facing East Africa. And so I think there was a disconnect for me when I went to university, because I was like, okay, I want to become a doctor and, you know, save the world, right? Save and work in Africa. And that was kind of, you know, one of the themes was Africa, helping where there's inequality and more stark inequality than what you would see in Canada.
Right.
But it felt so disconnected. And so one of the major decisions that I made at that time was to leave the sciences and STEM and pursue international development. And I actually took a year after my first year of university in sciences to then go and work in Zimbabwe. And I worked there as a teacher in project management for a number of different projects going on across Africa, the headquarters being in Zimbabwe at the time for this NGO. And I was a teacher at the age of like 20, teaching people from age 25 to 35, mostly male, about, you know, international development concepts and projects of the World Bank and so on and so forth. And I think for me, I wanted that connection to say, how can I help today? Right. Mm-hmm. And so I actually ended up changing my whole degree to international development and political science and international relations. And that was a major shift that I took. And from that point on, you know, from there, I went on to law school and so on and so forth. And then eventually found my way back into the STEM, into the STEM world. But I think one of the reasons that at that time, I, you know, felt so disconnected from mathematics and science, because it was, I didn't see the application. And I didn't grow up in a time where one could really understand the direct application of mathematics and sciences and engineering and all of this to how I was going to help the world. It always felt like, you know, it was something you had to do to get to a place where one day you can help. And I just didn't take those steps. And so I think at that time, there wasn't a lot of mentorship for how one can use degrees in mathematics or sciences, apart from the traditional you know, pathways, which still took many, many years, to actually work towards something. So So I ended up going into what I believed in, advocating for human rights and law and justice. And that's why I went to do law. And I think that that was an interesting, an interesting time in my life, because I think all of the mathematics that I had learned, all of that foundation that I had in STEM actually made me excel in law school because of the cognitive framework and the logic and the steps that one takes to get to the, you know, to the conclusion. It actually, that logic framework had been set in me. And so I did really well at, when I went into the humanities and law and all of that. But only to kind of then specialize in IP law and patents, which now brings me back to, and you know, the sciences and the engineering and all of that that I learned earlier on, and the organic chemistry and so on and so forth. So really kind of interesting how things are kind of circular. So you almost go towards things that you kind of, you know, you kind of realize the opportunities that were available, but you didn't know of them. You didn't have the mentorship in that to understand it. And then my whole sort of career started to move towards now advocating for others to understand what I didn't have the mentorship in, to realize the value of staying in STEM subjects.
Oof. So now I got questions. I got questions.
I'm sure.
So I'm very curious as to when you decided to, you know, sort of to walk away from STEM in a sense, and not you know, pursue that any longer. And then you went to Zimbabwe and you were working there. What was that experience like? Was it scary for you to tell your parents? And then sort of like that's a major decision.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting for me because I find that I always had my own mind. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's certain things in life and certain decisions that we make in our life that are essential. Like, and I think that was one of the pivotal moments where I had found my voice. Mm-hmm. And even though I still kind of, you know, how can I say it? So when I made that decision to say that, look, I can't see myself doing something that is just seems like it's things that I need to do or things that I need to learn for the purpose of getting into med school. But I'm not passionate about it. I don't feel the human connection. That was a decision I made that didn't go without, you know, some struggle. But when I make up my mind about things, you know, good thing is that I had supportive parents that are like, okay, look, if this is what you want to try, great. And so I made that decision to do that. And it really changed everything for me, because from that point onwards, I still went to university, but I had changed my whole major.
Right.
And when I started to make, you know, when I found my voice and I started to see the opportunities that were out there, above and beyond the traditional, like, you know, because I think, you know, at the time that I was growing up, it was all oriented towards what is your career going to be? Are you going to be an engineer? Are you going to be an accountant? Are you going to be a doctor? Are you going to be a surgeon? Are you going to be a dentist? And are you going to be a lawyer? And so part of the reason that I went into law was because at least it was a profession, you know? And so when I studied international development and, you know, political science, I still was gearing everything towards social justice, not necessarily corporate law, right? And even the decisions I made in terms of the schools and their programs, the school that I went to for law school was more social justice oriented. And from there, you know, I think it became clear after I did my articling that I didn't really see myself as working at a full service law firm and practicing as a lawyer. And so I went on and I got a full scholarship to do my master's of law in the UK. And that was, again, related to human rights and, you know, more international law. Mm-hmm. And that's where I decided to then pick a topic in IP law that was related to patents on biogenetic resources related to plant patents coming out of Africa.
Wow.
Indigenous communities and so on and so forth. And so I think the theme of all of this was me trying to understand, you know, even international development, it was a multidisciplinary undergrad where you're learning about international relations, you're learning about economics, you're learning about sociology, like so many different areas to try to understand how does this world work? Why do we have these inequalities? Why is this, you know, their major debt in African countries, in developing countries? What is it that we can do? What is the agency of humans to change that, right? So I was just trying to form a world, an understanding of how the world works and what am I going to do to help change things. And I think part of having this kind of multidisciplinary background, really, really the range of different disciplines that I got to work in actually helped to inform how I got to where I got to,
which I can see it,
right?
I can see it. That was my thought, was when you were talking and then you actually said it, was like, figure out how the world works, because that's key. That's a key piece, right? And your place in it, like, what's, you know, why am I here? What's my purpose? Because we all have one. And then sort of like, how does, like, all of the things that have happened to you, all of the things that you've been able to learn, like the knowledge that you've put in, you know, that's in here. And for those people who can't see me, I was pointing at my head. It's like one of those things where it's like, okay, and I'll just use myself as an example. It has taken me a long little while. I mean, it was worth the journey, but a long little while for me to figure out how it all plays together, right? And it wasn't until fairly recently where I can say, okay, I get it. I get how, you know, my MBA plays with my engineering degree, plays with my, you know, my doctorate in educational leadership, plays with project management. But, you know, I see how it all comes together. And even in what I do now, advocating for women of color in STEM, I'm like, I see how those stories interact together to make me, to help me do what I do here. But it takes you a while to get there.
And I think, you know what, that's what I'm saying, that there's certain themes or certain questions that kind of stay with us, right, throughout our whole career. And so even if it seems like, oh, you're doing this and then you're doing this, and to someone else, it might kind of seem it's all over the place. For me, it completely all makes sense that all of these little pieces fit together to form this kind of picture of the world, not just for myself, like my perception of the world, but of all of the pieces that I needed in order to interact with that world in a more meaningful fashion. You know, and so I'm a huge advocate for saying that I think it's so important to be exposed to so many different subject areas, because I think part of the problem is a lot of the disciplines, you know, the way that our disciplines and our the academic structure of the different disciplines, the different departments, is coming from a cognitive framework that was framed from a very male-oriented, kind of mindset, but also a very colonialist mindset. And what I find is that I'm like you, I need to understand the connection between it all. How does it all connect? Right. Not how is it all siloed? Because I find a lot of our disciplines are fragmented and siloed. And I think that that's always an indication of the mindset of the framers of the structure. So if your cognitive mindset is fragmented and siloed, that's what will manifest and be created in the world. And so I find that the diversity of, you know, players now that are framing, you know, this multidisciplinary, connecting the pieces now, that's coming because of the diversity of people involved. And I think that women have a huge role to play in this, how to connect different pieces that have traditionally been kept as separate disciplines, you know, and I think that's really changing, and that the role of, you know, women like you and myself is to make those connections now for the next generation. Ooh. How all of those pieces come together.
Played it. So here's the interesting thing. I agree with you 100%. I would actually venture to say that I'm not sure that it ever worked. Like the fragments, like, you know, your siloed approach to it. I don't know that it ever really worked. I think there are a lot of people who we went along because it was what we knew. It was like, exactly. this is what we're doing, right? And so I don't know if anyone, I won't say anyone, because people questioned, right? But there weren't enough people who had voices big enough for people to be like, oh, wait, why do we do this? Why is it this way? I know as an engineer that I don't go into a project alone. I'm working with an architect. I'm working with an electrical engineer. I'm working with a civil engineer. I'm working, you know, it's like we have to work. There's stuff that your stuff is impacting my stuff. My stuff is impacting your stuff. We have to work together. We have to be in this space together, know how to work together. I got to know a little bit about what you're talking about so that I can be better at my job. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly. So I'm a huge believer that not only is it, you know, the value of and the success of projects and the value and the future value of projects is really based on the people, the diversity of the disciplines and the people involved.
Yep.
Also, it's not enough to say, let's bring an architect and let's bring an engineer and let's bring, you know, a doctor and, you know, whatever together. It's also to say that we all need to have that general knowledge of all of these disciplines as a foundation so that we can actually understand why you need to have all of these people at the table.
Yeah.
All of these voices at the table. And so I think for me, it's about connecting the disconnected. Right now, I've been working in healthcare innovation. And for me, innovation is just a fancy word for change. And for me, innovation is really about saying, what is the cognitive mindset of the people at the table that are going to design the future workflows, the future, you know, optimization and efficiency of systems, right? Innovation is about change for, you know, efficiency, I'd say, for better outcomes, for better understanding of the problems, solving, you know, creating solutions to the problems. So change for me means change in the mindset that, you know, when we think of innovation, a lot of people think of technology. Yes. They think of, you know, technological solutions or digitization. Yeah. Or digital transformation. And I always think of digitization and technology as the tool. Mm-hmm. But the actual innovation is the people that are designing the logic, the algorithms that will actually make those technological solutions, you know, actually useful to society and meaningful to society.
I just got chills. Just want you to know that. you're absolutely right in the way in which you described and defined what other people believe innovation is. It's like, it's always a thing, right? Or it's always something that's sort of like this new thing, right? And it's never the people. It's always a thing or a new process or, you know what I'm saying? But it's like,
I think it's the mindset of the people, because everything is being designed in the reflection of us, right? And what we're thinking in our processes. So for me, The value of the innovation is about the diversity of the voices you can bring to the table that are obviously coming with different cognitive mindsets and different mind maps because of the way that they were, you know, that they think. So if you don't have women at the table, if you don't have people of color at the table,
right,
you're already missing the value of all of that diversity of the different mindsets that are required to change the system.
You just gave me a visual that I absolutely love. Like when you said mind maps. So in my mind, I see, you know, I see my mind map. I see yours. I see, you know, a couple of other people. And if we were to like put those things together, you know, sort of try to fuse them together, and we could see all of the different little pieces that sort of fall out. And then we would also be able to see the similarities and the things that are familiar across, you know, cross gender, cross, you know, human being, you know,
yeah.
I would love for that to actually happen.
And, you know, you said something earlier that kind of, you know, I think about a lot, right? Which is you said, you know, no one actually questions, why are we doing things the way that we do it? We actually just kind of, there's certain things that we all question, right? Mm-hmm. Or that, you know, certain movements make us question or look at in a different way. But ultimately, I think the whole innovative process and a lot of the change that is required is just about asking more questions. It's not really about the answer, right? It's about asking better questions and to find better solutions, because I think the solution is embedded in the question that you ask, right? The hypothesis is the starting point. But if your hypothesis is wrong, it's always going to lead you to the wrong conclusion, right? And so the diversity of questions that we need to ask to solve world problems requires diverse people coming to the table and asking the questions from different vantage points, right? And so for me, I find that I feel like life is a journey, and maybe it's not about finding the answer, but it's about refining the questions that we ask, right?
More chills, more chills.
And so for me, it's about constantly refining the question, right? So if I'm still the question when I was a child was like, why is there such inequality? Why are people, you know, walking barefoot next to a Mercedes-Benz and it's normal?
Right.
And I couldn't understand that. I couldn't understand it. And the question is still there. Right. But the way that I've tried to answer the question is through various, you know, the public sector, the NGO sector, the education sector, the healthcare sector, the engineering sector, so many different sectors. But the question remains the same. Right. What is the thing that is creating this inequality? So for me, a big part of that is the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Right? The choices that people have and the opportunities that people have. So one of the projects that I worked on, which was a phenomenal project, and I lived in Cape Town for a couple of years as well and got to travel across and live in many African countries, was the Next Einstein Initiative. And it was to create centers of excellence in master's, PhD, postdoc level in mathematics.
Wow.
And mathematical modeling. And it was called the Next Einstein Initiative because it was actually about finding genius in the villages, to say that the only thing holding back a lot of the genius that exists, the next Einsteins of the world, is really just the opportunity and the pathway.
Yeah.
Mentorship. And so this was really about creating centers of excellence across Africa and having access to the top professors who'd come and live with the students. And these were Nobel laureates and Fields medalists and so on and so forth that were coming to teach the students in Africa. And I remember one of the slogans that we had was, the next Einstein will be an African woman from an African village, an African girl wow. from an African village. And I think one of the biggest things that I learned was it's really about having the champions, the mentorship, and the opportunity. The genius is there lying in, but it's really just the opportunity and the path.
That is incredible. That is incredible. I almost want to sit with just that bit of information just for, you know, because it's like that. It's one of those things where, so when we start talking about opportunities, and this is, I get really excited about these things because that it's a part of my purpose is to provide opportunities, right? Because I feel incredibly blessed to have been given given and taken advantage of opportunities that were presented to me. Because I didn't grow up where, you know, there's not an engineer in my family other than myself. So I didn't have an internal, you know, I didn't have internal motivation in the sense of I can look at my aunt or I didn't have that. Right. And so for me to be an engineer and for me to look like I look and to be a Black woman, I just feel like it's a part of my duty to A, reproduce myself in real time. Also, it's like, I can't be out here. A, I don't want to be the only one. I just don't want it. Right. But I also want to be able to tell the truth about the profession and, you know, but sort of make sure that any girl who has an interest, they know where to find me. They know I'm accessible. I use me as a mentor, use me as a stepping stone for your next opportunity, because that's why I'm here. And so,
it's so much part of your purpose. And sometimes we forget that, right? Because I think a lot of this is one thing I've been really thinking about when I think about, you know, self-empowerment and empowering others, which is that we're always struggling. I think women of color, and I've learned this throughout my career, that there are structural injustices or structures in place that are not measuring me based on my intellect and ability, but based on parameters that I have no control over, which right. I would say are unfair or unjust. Mm-hmm. But then I think about the fact that, and so I'm in the struggle to empower myself in a system where sometimes I feel like I'm the victim. But then I think about where am I going to put my focus? Am I going to focus on why I'm still not part of the boys' club?
Right.
Why I'm still, you know, going to conferences where it's 90% male, or fighting that, or think about the billion girls that would love to be in my position.
Yep.
And to see the privilege that I sit in, even if I'm going through my own struggles, but to see the privilege that I'm actually sitting and the platform that I have to do so much for those that are struggling even more than me. And so I find that empowerment, while we're struggling with our own empowerment and our own, you know, injustices done to us, but we have to put it into perspective as to where we sit in that hierarchy and what we can do with what power we do have. And so that platform for me is it's a responsibility, because it's so easy to get caught up in your own life and your own goals and trying to reach somewhere, not recognizing that you're already sitting somewhere where you are in a position to help millions.
Yes.
And you know, and it, that oscillation is, I think, finding the balance, because you have to be in a position to feel empowered, to empower others, but that it's sometimes happening in real time where injustices are happening to you while you're trying to, you know, empower others. And sometimes it's kind of like literally happening in real time. And it's kind of the irony of it is not lost on me. I think that is the struggle, and that is the meaning of it all, right? That you have to practice what you preach. So every time you feel disempowered or held back or treated unfairly just because you're a woman, or just because, you know, it's not because you're not smart enough, but because you're not given the benefit of the doubt from the get-go. Yeah. But at the same time, you're talking to others about how to empower others and to stand up for others. And and you almost have to find that balance and keep refocusing yourself on what is the struggle you're going to fight for.
Yeah.
You know, for yourself or for others.
Yeah. But you know, the other part of period. I think that is the struggle. But there's beauty in it also for me, is that, you know, even recognizing all of the crappy, you know, stuff that I've gone through, that I can stand here, you know, in front of an audience of girls or whoever else, flat footed, and say, I would do it again. I don't regret my choice. I love what I do. I love who I am. I love how I got here, even with all of the bumps and the band-aids and the things. To be able to do that is more than a lot of people are able to do. And so that's for me the beauty.
And I think, you know, when you were talking about, you know, the MBA and the engineering, and now you've come to understand how it all connects, I think that's where you're meeting yourself, right?
Yeah.
All of these things, that there was a logic and a reasoning, and there was a kind of, you know, predestined, almost kind of like, oh, that was all necessary to happen for me to be where I am today. And sometimes it doesn't make sense at the time. And sometimes, you know, it might seem like a failure or you didn't finish something, but there is a rhyme and a reason to why I think we do where we end up, right? Yeah. And all of those pieces that seemed disconnected, as they connect, you know, I think that, I guess that's also the spiritual journey, right? To connect the connected, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I feel like we could be talking forever, but I've got to ask you a couple, maybe three more questions, right? One is, so update us on like where you are right now. Like where are you? What are you doing? All those things.
Yeah. So for the last year, I've been sitting as over a year. I've been sitting as a chief innovation officer for MCI One Health, which is a large healthcare ecosystem of physical clinics, over 25 physical clinics and, you know, virtual healthcare platforms and, you know, I guess healthcare innovation when it comes to rare disease screening and when it comes to, you know, where healthcare is moving and genomics and so on and so forth. But I've recently just been transitioning out of that. So this was a company that we took IPO, and that was really exciting. And to be sitting as an officer of a publicly listed company and listed on the TSX has been such an honor. And, you know, to work with, you know, pathologists and doctors and all of the people that are working in healthcare delivery, but also in healthcare innovation and the future of healthcare with academic institutions and pharma companies and so on and so forth, has been super exciting. But where I'm now transitioning to is to actually look at the question and in my own company of really looking at incubating and accelerating technology and innovation, but also focusing on, you know, young women, young people that are coming up in their careers, to provide them the opportunity to mentor, to lead, and kind of guide them in their process.
Love.
What I'm finding is you're having a lot of younger people now, a lot of younger women that are coming in to the STEM field. And I work with girls that are 14, 15, 16, as young as 14. That are now working in their own inventions and their own solutions in the STEM fields, whether it's, you know, coming up with, you know, solutions for climate change, you name it, or trying to solve world problems. And I'm finding that there's a gap there. There's a gap there because although there's a lot of focus on, you know, young women in, you know, entrepreneurship, innovation, STEM, there's still a gap in terms of the steps and the mentorship and the championing, right, or the resources needed Mm-hmm. Even if it's the smallest things, right?
Yeah.
That's really not there. We're really kind of looking at venture capitalists, looking at, you know, investing in, you know, more seasoned entrepreneurs, but there's still a gap with those young people that are actually coming up with great solutions, but don't have that pathway. So I look at all the gaps and, you know, what could have little Salima could have done if she had had that kind of, you know, empowerment, you know, and championing throughout her career to say, oh yeah, this is possible. Sometimes it's as simple as saying, yeah, you're brilliant. Why aren't you applying to Oxford? Oh, I don't know if I'm good enough. And then watching these young girls apply to Oxford just because I'm saying, yeah, you will get in.
Yeah.
You're doubting yourself because you don't think you're there. But just as simple as helping people with their applications, in terms of going, dreaming bigger than they're dreaming to say, oh, it's possible. And then for them to actually do that, it's such a huge thing when they get in for me. And I'm like, I knew it. You just didn't know it, right? So I think I'm seeing that there's still a gap there in terms of, you know, so much of our talented young people that actually don't even know the pathways that are open to them.
Yeah.
Now, so part of that mentorship is just literally putting into someone's mindset, your standard, you are at that standard. Why do you think that's not a door that's open to you? Why do you think Harvard and Cambridge and Oxford are not
open?
And I almost had to go through it. I had to go to those schools. I had to, you know, go to Cambridge. I had to have patents sitting at Oxford for me to actually believe that myself.
I love this. And I'm going to say this with all sincerity and truth. Whatever you need, let me help. I think you being on the podcast is a good first step. I'm going to try and get this into as many hands as possible so people can hear it and know, and then do the outreach, if they're interested in helping you along the way, because this is exactly what we need to be doing.
And I think that there's kind of like, you know, the fact that you're doing this podcast means that, you know, there's women like us coming together. And this is part of something that's going to be much greater than ourselves. And I think the story's being written.
Yeah.
The next chapter, I have a strong feeling that we will be doing something together.
Okay. I feel it.
A story there that there's a synergy there and a connection there, about, you know, kind of creating a critical mass around really doing something at scale.
Yeah.
With bringing people together. And that's exactly what you're already doing through this podcast, right? I see that as that next step now, to kind of now venture out to actually work in meaningful projects that can actually make a difference at a much larger scale.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So two questions. One is, tell people where they can find you. If they're looking for you, and they will be looking for you, where can people find you?
So I'm, stay tuned, because I'm just kind of working on this next step with my company, Structa Global. Mm-hmm. But you can find me on LinkedIn, Salima Kimji. And I'll give you the details of that. And you can find me on, on some of the other social media platforms, but LinkedIn will be the main platform at the moment, and the website is shortly to follow.
Got you. Okay. Here is the last question that I ask every single guest on the show. And it is, if you could travel back through time and talk to your younger self, what advice would you give her and why?
So I think if I could travel back, I don't know if I could or would be able to do anything differently, because it's leading to me to be the person that I am today, whether it was good or bad. However, I think the biggest thing that I would say to my younger self is, don't doubt yourself.
Don't doubt
yourself. You already knew you had the capability. So finding your voice and believing in yourself is about drowning out any other version that is not your voice, right? That is not coming from your own voice. Because I think a lot of us look at ourselves through the perception of others, right? There's that quote I once heard, I'm not who I think I am. I'm not who you think I am. I am who I think you think I am. And so sometimes we're treated unfairly or other people are doubting us. We're looking at ourselves measured through the validation of our grades and our, you know, promotions and other people's validation of ourselves. And yeah. I think at some point you have to be your own judge and you have to be okay with the fact that others won't agree, but that they're not measuring you. You have to be able to measure yourself, and measuring yourself means having your own voice and believing in yourself no matter what.
Yeah. I'm a true believer in, I can't remember who told it to me. I think it was one of my girlfriends. She says, your inner knower never lies. And when she said it the first time, I was like, girl, what are you talking about? But now the older I get, I'm like, you know, that's so true. You always knew. You just didn't trust yourself enough, you know, to do or to say or to act. The older you get, that inner knower is very, or at least for me, it's very strong. And
I totally agree. I think you always know, but there's always that kind of balance that has to be found between knowing and just sometimes just going with the flow, right?
Yeah.
With a lot of type A personalities that are ambitious and have passion and want to find meaning in life, you know, part of the difficulty is you're sometimes afraid to make the wrong decision or afraid of failing. And I'm starting to actually understand what it means to fail forward, that there isn't actually any failures. There's just lessons.
Yes.
Because all of the things that go wrong are leading you to what is supposed to go right.
Yeah.
And so I kind of find that it's not doubting yourself, but it's also being okay with the fact that it's not always going to work out, you know, the way that you thought it was going to work out. I find that life doesn't happen, you know, in a transactional format. Life happens sideways. And so many of the things that you plan, it doesn't happen that way, but that it comes from some other way. And then after the fact that you recognize, oh, wow, right? I didn't plan that, but it did lead me to where, you know, when you're in the right place. But only usually in hindsight, right? That when you look back, you're like, oh, all of this had to happen, even if it was a bad thing for me to be here. And if that hadn't happened, maybe I wouldn't have pursued this, right? So I kind of find that it's like, you know, you can go back and say, what would I have done differently? I don't know if I could have done anything differently. But what I could say is I could have done it with more confidence in myself. Yeah. Rather than trying to find the measures outside of myself to tell me that I'm right or wrong.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So let me just say that I've really enjoyed this conversation. I've enjoyed you immensely. And thank you for agreeing to be a guest on the show.
And thank you for having me. And honestly, I'm hoping that we'll continue this conversation.
trust. This is not the end of this. All right. But I will say, you guys, if you guys have not heard of Salima Kimchi, you need to look her up on LinkedIn, and the website is coming and you can look. And here's the other thing. You guys got to read the show notes. I say this every show. You got to read the show notes. All her information will be where? In the show notes. So please take the time and the effort to really get to know her, and let's help support this effort that she has. It's amazing and it needs all the support it can get. I have, again, immensely enjoyed having you on the show today.
Thank you.
It just, yeah, you hit me in a place. I was not expecting this, but I know a blessing when I see it. So thank you.
Thank you very much. It was such an honor to be on this amazing podcast. And I'm so looking forward to seeing where this goes as well. And what all of these, you know, platforms to bring people together, it's always something much larger. And
of course,
that's what I'm excited about, you know?
So, yes. Okay. So, you guys, this concludes this episode of Stimming in Stilettos. And as I always say, to everyone, please Take care of yourself and keep yourselves safe.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Stemming in Stilettos. Please check out the show notes to get additional information about today's guest or today's topic. You can find the podcast on every major podcast platform. You can find additional information about Dr. Tasha at www.drtasha.com. Thanks again, and don't forget to tune in every Tuesday for the latest episode of Stemming in Stilettos.